ticklish business any way you look at it. Come on, we'll stick together.
Ticklish Business, the podcast devoted to honoring and deconstructing the world of classic cinema. As always, I'm your host, Kristen Lopez. Ticklish Business is back after a very unplanned hiatus. Turns out my computer was causing a lot of problems with the issue. Audio was going missing, and it was just not pleasant to record on, so I had to buy a new computer very unexpectedly, but I am back. And we have a lot of really fun things planned for Ticklish Business going forward. But in this episode specifically, author Tom Lazanti is going to join me to talk about his book, Talkin' 60s Drive-In Movies, as well as the 1965 Elvis Presley beach musical, Girl Happy. So even though we're in the dog days of summer, there's still plenty of time left to talk about going to the beach.
Yes, everybody's girl happy when Elvis invades the land of the bikinis on those spring vacation revels. And thousands of college kids go, go, go. They come from everywhere for those mad vacation days and nights. With a spotlight on love as thousands of the faithful neck up a storm.
After becoming the biggest thing in rock and roll, Elvis Presley started his film career in 1956 with the feature Love Me Tender. By the mid-60s, there was no bigger star than Elvis Presley. Girl Happy was his 18th film, and upon its release, the world was looking a lot different. Elvis's films up to this point had a successful formula that had worked for the man dubbed the King. Elvis, usually playing a rock and roller or a race car driver, or both, some type of daredevil, has to deal with a set of circumstances that put him up against a headstrong girl who he eventually falls in love with. The year prior to Girl Happy's release, Presley had one of the best examples of this formula with the Anne Margaret feature Viva Las Vegas. Producer Joe Pasternak, who made a lot of money working on the beach comedy Where the Boys Are, thought Presley would be perfectly suited for another film, preferably paired again with previous co-star Margaret. Unfortunately, Anne Margaret had become an even bigger star in the wake of Viva Las Vegas and was deemed to be too upstaging for someone like Presley, and the film was changed to star MGM darling Shelley Fabares. With the wheels in motion, Presley and the crew ended up going to the beach.
You said something about a favor? We've been thinking about adding to the act.
She'll tell you that she loves you, make you feel just like a king. She'll cry to you and lie to you, she'll do most anything. She'll get right up next to you, and the first thing that you know, you'll be telling her you're sorry cause she hurt you so. I said she's evil. Oh, it's evil, girl. There ain't no doubt about it. She's the meanest girl in town.
Did I say the beach? Actually, I meant more like the MGM studio backlot. Despite the film's Fort Lauderdale, Florida setting, Pasternak and crew decided to keep costs low and shoot in Los Angeles, leading to a film that feels, at times, a bit cramped for a bustling college shindig. The movie was also on the hook for being Elvis's first film after the massive acclaim generated by his greatest competitors, the Beatles' first film, A Hard Day's Night, the year before. In fact, it was feared that Elvis wouldn't get nearly the attention from girls as he had previously, so the script was punched up to include more Beatles-esque hijinks, including giving Elvis's Rusty Wells character some additional friends to make them seem like a group, and it was supposed to feel similar to A Hard Day's Night. I don't really think it's the exact same movie. But by this point, Elvis was resting on his laurels. Girl Happy's songs, all risen in pitch to sound again like the Mop Tops, aren't considered his best work, but they are adhering to how previous songs in his canon sounded. It didn't really matter, though, as Girl Happy was another hit for Presley, despite middling reviews that felt that the film wandered and was reminiscent of several other beach movies that had already been released. Presley would go on to release two other movies right after this, both in 1965, Tickle Me and Harum Scarum, and continued to work steadily in movies until retiring from them entirely in 1969. When we come back, Tom Lazanti and I hit the waves to talk Girl Happy.
Hey, there's a nice, quiet little place.
What's that? Okay, it's a beach party. Come on.
Hey, everybody, gather around. Listen to that bongo sound. Grab the first one in your reach. Now we're gonna shake the beach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do the clam, do the clam. Grab your barefoot baby by the hand. Turn and tease, hug and squeeze. Dig right in and do the clam.
Listeners, it is summertime, so I figured it's probably time we do a summer movie. And who better to talk summer movies than the guy that I have as guest today? I'm talking with the fantastic Tom Lisanti. Tom, how are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I am so excited to get to talk to you today about an Elvis movie. We're talking about 1965's Girl Happy, which I had never seen up until 24 hours ago. So I was very happy to get to talk to you about it. But Tom, you're the author of a book, Talkin' 60s Drive-In Movies. Can you tell us a little bit about the book and why we're talking about Girl Happy today?
Sure. Talkin' 60s Drive-In Movies is my first book for Bear Manna Media, but it's actually book number 9. Most of my other books are with McFarlane, where I interviewed a lot of mostly actresses from the 60s that worked with Elvis in the beach movies, biker movies, 60 starlet type actresses. But I did do a book called Hollywood Surf and Beach Movies, The First Wave, 1959 to 69, where I talk about Girl Happy because it falls into that spring break beach movie genre. This latest book came about because two actresses that I profiled in a previous book, Jan Watson and Arlene Charles, found the books, found their profiles, and wrote to me saying, if you ever do another book, we would love to be interviewed. So that's what started the book going. This one I did a little differently. I tried to focus on the people I interviewed either on a genre or one or two films in their careers that fell into the drive-in category. Jan Watson was in the Mad Helms Spy movies. Arlene Charles was in Elvis movies and beach movies. But the beginning chapter is all about Elvis movies in the 60s, particularly these MGM movies from 1963 to like 67, 68, where at first the budgets, it happened at the World's Fair, Viva Las Vegas, were bigger. They were shot on location. And then he did a movie called Kissin' Cousins for producer Sam Katzman, and it was shot on the back lot, cheap, and it still made a lot of money. And after that, MGM slashed the budgets on his movies, and they were really drive-in type movies based on the cost, and that's where a lot of his fans saw it. Girl Happy was just at the cusp. It came out just after Viva Las Vegas. It's set in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. They never left Los Angeles. Any of the beach scenes was shot in Santa Monica. But because it was MGM, it has that glossy, vibrant MGM sheen to it. So the budget looked bigger than when it actually was. And it was a quick shoot, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks tops. It was a typical drive-in movie, especially of the Elvis kind.
I'm a big fan of, if anybody listens to the podcast, I love Gidget. And so Gidget is kind of my entry into the beach films. I've seen, like, Beach Blanket Bingo, but I've only ever seen 2 Elvis movies in my entire life. I've seen Viva Las Vegas and Jailhouse Rock, so the 2 big ones. But I hadn't gotten to see this one yet, and so I was really glad when you suggested it, because watching this, you get that nice, glossy MGM veneer to it. They actually borrowed the opening and some footage from Where the Boys Are, which I just seen a couple months ago, and so I was watching it thinking, am I watching Where the Boys Are? No, they just actually borrowed some footage from that movie.
It was the same producer. Joe Pasternak, who produced Where the Boys Are, did Girl Happy.
And so watching this, I was really interested in how Elvis, at this point, was in the midst of his heyday, was trying something a little different with this movie. For starters, and we can talk about it more in-depth in a second, this isn't quite a beefcake role. He's covered up for the entire movie.
Movie. Yep.
Yeah, I was very concerned about the heat, because I'm sitting there thinking, he's got to be hot. You know, everybody else is in bathing suits, and he's wearing, you know, button-down shirts, and he's water skiing in, like, a flannel jacket practically. So this was a really fun one to watch, even though I don't know if many people would consider this his best, even or if it's even in the top 5.
No, it was a big hit. For the 60s, biggest hit was Viva Las Vegas. followed by Blue Hawaii. This was number 3 or 4 at the box office. This and Spin Out both grossed over $3 million, which for the time was a lot of money. So this is one of his biggest hits. And I think it came out at the perfect time because in 1963, Beach Party was the sleeper hit of the year with Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello. And in 1964, there was the sequels, Bikini Beach, Pajama Party, Muscle Beach Party. And then other studios started to come up with their own beach movies with their Frankie and Annette clones. You had James Darren and Pamela Tiffin, and For Those Who Think Young, Bobby Vinton and Jackie DeShannon and Surf Party, Fabian and Shelley Fabre and Tab Hunter, who just passed away, and Barbara Eden and Ride the Wild Surf. And those are all in 64. Girl Happy, which we said was produced by Joe Pasternak, who also did Where the Boys Are, took that Where the Boys Are story about spring break, combined it with the beach party movies, setting it in on the beach in Fort Lauderdale, but mostly on the back lot in a hotel, and came out in January of 65 when the beach party genre was still in full gear and was a big smash. And of course, what I like about the movie is they surround Elvis with a great supporting cast. So many young people, Joby Baker, Gary Crosby, Jimmy Hawkins, Shelley Fabre, Marianne Mobley, Chris Noel, Lynn Edgington, Nancy Zarr, Gail Gerber, wonderful people, young people who were really into the movie, and with them in support really helps make the movie a little better than some of the other Elvis movies of the time.
This is a movie that has a very wacky plot, for starters.
Yes.
I mean, you have Elvis playing nightclub singer Rusty Wells. They are working for this nightclub owner named Big Frank, and they want to go to Fort Lauderdale for spring break. Now, Elvis looks a little too old to be enjoying spring break, but we'll let that slide for
yes.
now.
Yeah, I think he was like 30.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking, God, man, you're a little too out of place for this group. He gets roped into watching Big Frank's daughter, Valerie, played by, is it Shelley? I thought it was Fabares. Have I been saying it wrong all this time?
I heard it say Shelley Fabre.
Okay, so that's yeah. what we're going to call her. She's the nice girl that like goes to Fort Lauderdale to read for a second, and then all of a sudden I think she realizes she's hot, and then she's dating this Italian exchange student, and all of it is this keep away where Rusty and his crew are trying to get with girls on the side but also keep her from engaging in anything that is considered immoral. I watched this, and if you've listened to the show long, you know that I am very interested in how movies navigate sexual politics. By the mid-60s, the studio system was crumbling in on itself, and so I was very shocked watching this movie. Sex is just a word that's dropped into everything. Rusty says that there's 30,000 sex-starved boys in Fort Lauderdale, and I think they call Romano, the Italian exchange student, a sex maniac at one point. There's no hiding the fact of what these kids are doing while they're down there, which I found very admirable. I was like, at least we're not lying about them going down to Fort Lauderdale to drink soda and hold hands.
I mean, Elvis hooks up right away with Dina, played by Marianne Mobley, that every time they're really close to getting it on, he has to go rescue Valerie. And then the guys, Jimmy Hawkins hooks up with Gail Gerber, Gary Crosby hooks up with Pamela Corrin or Rusty Allen, immediately get one-week girlfriends, so to speak. And they're always making out when they all jump up and they have to go rescue Valerie from that Latin lover who may be taking advantage of her.
It's ironic almost to watch this. I mean, it's still a very innocent depiction of spring break.
Yes.
You know what spring break is now. You're like, it's a stress nightmare from what I've seen. I thankfully skipped spring break when I was in college, and I'm very happy that I did. But the funny thing is that Elvis fans were predominantly women. Yet this movie feels very much like an 80s teen boy sex comedy almost, where it's the guys are in control, they're the ones leading things. So I thought it was ironic that this movie is probably sold to women, yet it's very male-centric.
Yeah, and what you brought up at the beginning, Elvis, for a movie set in spring break in Florida, doesn't even take a shirt off. And yes, the guys are shirtless, but it's the looser girls like Gail Gerber and Marianne Mobley and Chris Noel are in bikinis. Shelley Fabre is in that more modest two-piece. But yeah, there's a lot more skin for the males in the audience. But that could be because the girls did want to go see Elvis, so if their boyfriends had to come along, at least they get
True.
To see some pretty bikini-clad girls dance along with Elvis.
That's exactly what I was thinking, is watching this. It's not a beach movie. without a stripper character. Again, one of the boys has one of those too.
Right, and Barbara Nichols.
Here it's Nita Talbot's character, who plays Sunny Days. She's definitely the more overt stripper in one of these movies that I've seen. She's definitely taken her clothes off. She advocates at one point that Valerie has the body for stripping. And yet, she's not really ever demonized. She's presented as a ditz, but she's got a good heart. When they're in the jail, because of course it all ends up with Valerie and her crew being put in jail for drunkenness, Rusty tunnels through. It turns into like reverse Shawshank Redemption at a certain point. She's the one that comes up with the concept of like helping him wear the dress and get him out of the prison. She mentions that she knows how to get out of a dress quickly. So I like that. I like that she's an active participant, and we're not really supposed to look down on her because she's a stripper. I feel like this movie is oddly progressive in some regards.
Actually, she really didn't have a stripper body. It's a little bit of an atypical stripper. She's attractive, but she didn't have that va-va-boom, whereas
right.
like Barbara
She's
Nichols
did.
She's
not Amy Van Doren or anything
right,
like that.
Right.
So what I had heard about this movie is that essentially a lot of the decision-making that went into it was because of the Beatles. Is that something you discovered when you were working on the book?
No, I never heard that actually before.
I had been doing casual research of it, and supposedly the Beatles, having done A Hard Day's Night the year before, made Elvis look passé. And so when they made this movie, they actually changed all the songs to a higher pitch. So if you listen to some of the title song especially, it sounds a little higher than Elvis's register. And they also added the Friends to make them look like a group, much like the Fab Five.
That could be. I do know that with Shelley Fabre, she had the number one song in 62, Johnny Angel, but she told me she did not like to sing, and she credited that song's popularity due to the producer and the sound engineer for making her sound really good. So when she got this role, they hired her and told her she had to sing, and she didn't want to sing, and they said, oh, you could do it, and she said to me that, no, I can't do it, and they said, oh, you'll do it. And that one song that you mentioned, the high pitch, Spring Fever, when Elvis and the guys sing, and then Shelley and Chris Noel and Lynn Edgington, it's that duet. Shelley Fabre said she hates that song because they made her sing in a higher pitch than Elvis's higher pitch, and she felt she sounded like Minnie Mouse. So when you listen to that song, she does sing in a high pitch. Well, you could be right that they maybe did that to Elvis too.
It is a little hard not to see him as the old guard, especially the songs themselves. I don't know about you, but I thought the title song was good, and then the rest of the songs just weren't for me. And when I was taking notes, I was like, I literally think he's just coming up with song titles based on what he's seen around him. There's literally a song called Do Not Disturb in this movie. They're all very Elvis songs, but it's almost like they all sound the same. There's an emphasis on nursery rhyme jingles in this movie. When his friends show up, it's always to the tune of Three Blind Mice. It is easy to see how the Beatles could have really upstaged him. And I mean, it's not a detriment to the movie or anything, but it is hard if you know that a lot of the movie was shaped around the Beatles blowing everything up. Yeah,
we talked about the songs. Like Puppet on a Chain is a nice ballad. The soundtrack was very popular too. I think the soundtrack cracked the top 10. And the song is also infamous for Do the Clam, the big dance number on the beach, where everybody thinks that song is in Clam Bake, but it's really here in Girl Happy. And they had a good choreographer, David Winters from West Side Story, choreographed it. And Boris Segal was the director. This was his first and last movie with Elvis. Elvis really liked Norman Taurog, who directed a lot of his stuff, but he was so comfortable with Norman. Norman let Elvis do whatever he wanted. But on this movie, I think Boris actually directed Elvis. Elvis, working with somebody new, gives a little bit more to then the next movie that came along, Tickle Me or Harum Scarum, when he was back working with people he was more comfortable with. That's why I also don't think Girl Happy stands out too, because it had a different producer, different director than the normal people that Elvis regularly worked with.
Elvis is remarkably funny in this movie, especially the two movies I've seen, which were earlier in his career when he had that Elvis persona.
Right.
Here he's got some really funny moments. There's a scene where Romano is supposedly in the room with Valerie, and Rusty thinks he's going to get them thrown out of the hotel because there's no boys allowed. Just the way he acts around the manager trying to tell them this lie about the guy being in there, and then when he realizes that if the girls get thrown out, that's going to affect them, it's not true that anything untoward is going on. They're literally playing bridge. He has to pretend that he didn't say any of that, and then confuse the manager into letting them stay. And it's a fun bit of rapid-fire dialogue that requires some charm in order to get it to work, and I thought that was very inventive, and it's good to see him not be brooding. There's this lightness, there's this humor to his performance that I hadn't really seen in the two previous films.
That scene is very funny, and I like when he says to the hotel manager, "That's not a boy, they're playing bridge. It was a fourth."
And up until a certain point, you believe that Valerie and this guy have been together. She right. comes out in this shirt that looks like she's not wearing any clothes, and you find out that her friends are there. And even stuff like the boat chase, there is a boat chase in this movie on dry land, is really funny, even though it is hyper-exaggerated, and it's meant to give people in the drive-in audience something to watch in case their dates have gone bad.
The movie, like, just like the beach movies, throws in everything. You just said there's a boat chase on dry land. There's constantly people dancing on the sand. He's running around trying to break up Valerie with Romano. You make a good point. It is a little Hard Day's Night-ish because it's him and the four guys running around all over the place trying to follow her and break up whatever romance is happening with Romano. And you're right. Elvis is a little more lighthearted than he was previously in Viva Las Vegas, where it's a little more a serious role. Again, he played a race car driver there.
I'm sure it was frustrating for him. Most people know that Elvis turned down a lot of movies that ended up being very successful because of his manager, Colonel Parker. But, you know, he turned down West Side Story because they didn't think it was going to do anything. You find out this is what's happening to his career post Hard Day's Night, and I almost wish he had been given a chance to do something irreverent like the Beatles did. That film sends up the Beatles persona. And it would have been nice to see something that would have sent up the Elvis persona at that time. He turned down Bye Bye Birdie, which would have been perfect because that movie is all about the concept of mass hysteria over rock music. And I think that would have been a great non-threatening way for him to acknowledge the insanity of what he had created, and it wasn't to be. And I think that's a very sad what if.
Well, he was very loyal to Colonel Parker. After Blue Hawaii became a smash hit in 1961, and they realized the formula was Elvis, lots of songs, lots of pretty girls, beautiful location photography, that became the Elvis formula, which they stuck to. And then with Viva Las Vegas, finally got a female lead, co-star Anne Margaret, who was equal to his talent, singing and dancing. And the movie was another big hit. Both of them got really good reviews. And actually, MGM wanted Anne Margaret for the lead in here, but Colonel Parker was aghast that Anne Margaret was his equal and got just as good reviews for Viva Las Vegas, and also felt that that film's director favored Anne Margaret. He nixed Anne Margaret for Girl Happy. They went with Shelley Fabre, who just signed a 3-picture deal with MGM. So Colonel Parker was only out to make sure Elvis got whatever his quote was, which I think was close to $1 million per picture, and the formulas were there. And that's what he stuck to throughout the 60s.
Well, I want to talk about Shelley Fabre, because I think it is hard to see how she could have really done anything better in this film, because it is Elvis's movie, but she is good. She was Elvis's long-term leading lady. They did 3 films together. It is funny, the character is 21 years old. She still calls her dad daddy, and she is taking advantage of very weird scene. Her and Romano were on this boat, and he tries to get her drunk, and then he takes her to the strip club. So this poor girl has got victim tattooed on her head the entire film. But she's good. She's got this friskiness to her. The movie tries to recreate the Anne Margaret magic, the first song with Elvis at the club. And she can move well, but it is hard not to see the Anne Margaret comparisons, because I think the character is someone that she could have done very, very well. But I thought Shelley Fabre did really good. You know, you got to interview her and discuss all of this. What do you think about her character and her performance?
Oh, I think she was wonderful, and you could tell there's the chemistry there. I mean, they really hit it off. She told me when she got the role, she was not an Elvis fan, so she thought, all right, I'm going to do a movie with Elvis. She said she didn't get nervous until the first day on the set when she actually met him. And she saw him walking over to her. And she's like, oh, my God, it's Elvis Presley. But then she said she got over her nervousness. They hit it off. They became very friendly. The only thing she was scared about was doing that drunken scene, the stripping on the stage. Because she said she had to sing, she had to dance, she had to strip, and then she had to act drunk. She didn't think she could do it. She was on the Donna Reed show for many years. Donna Reed really gave her a pep talk, and she went out there, and I thought she did it very well, and she's very funny, and she was so sweet, and she still has fond memories of Chris Noel, Lynn Edgington, who played her two friends, and the three of them, too, are kind of, they were friendly, and Chris Noel said they got along great. The funny thing with what Chris Noel told me was that Elvis made sure his leading ladies always had flowers in their dressing room every day. And Chris noticed that Marianne Mobley and Shelley had flowers, but she and Lynn didn't. He went over to Elvis and said, Elvis, don't you like me and Lynn? He goes, yeah. She goes, well, I can have any flowers. She said their dressing room was flowers every day after that. And she said he was the sweetest, kindest guy she ever worked with. And Shelley Fabre said the same thing. To be honest, none of the ladies I interviewed that worked with him had any bad word to say about him. They all loved him, a Southern gentleman. And it comes across on the screen.
It really does. Maybe it was what I was expecting, so maybe I had my expectations set too high, but Elvis is good. I mean, there's many a swoony scene in this movie, but it doesn't feel overly so. It doesn't feel like this is a movie where Elvis's sole purpose is to seduce. Although there are several scenes where he is canoodling with women,
right.
Much of what gets him in trouble is, I guess, his interest in trying to prevent sex from happening, for lack of a better word. Whether it's Valerie or that dinner scene where he's got Dina in one room and
oh, right, yeah. outside.
And he's trying to keep both of them from seeing each other. Very funny scene. There's a lot of almost 1930s-esque screwball type of moments in how one character is doing one thing. He's got to keep both of the characters from realizing that they're there. I was happy that this wasn't just Elvis resting on his laurels.
I also think it's funny, too, where he realizes he's fallen for Valerie and does the ultimate sacrifice to be with her. His three friends now have time to make it with their girlfriends, and they're all depressed because they think that Rusty is sacrificing being with Valerie, who he has no interest in, and then the three of them concoct a plan to get him back with Dina when he doesn't want to get back with Dina.
Right. There's this whole comedy errors that happen. Right. It's a masterful little bit of editing in
yes.
how they're bemoaning how horrible friends they are to him.
Right.
And meanwhile, he's out. It's cross-cut with scenes of him and Valerie out having fun. Again, that water skiing scene with
right.
his jacket on, which I couldn't find any information. I was very interested in the fact that everybody is in bathing suits, and I know Elvis made movies where he wore bathing suits, but in this movie he doesn't. He's wearing pants and long shirts and jackets in this film, and it's supposed to be spring break in Florida, and I couldn't figure out if that was because he just didn't want to get half naked anymore or what. I'm assuming later movies he wasn't out in the sun wearing pants and long shirts.
Now that you mention it, the later films, he pretty much is covered up.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Harum Scarum, he's definitely covered up. In Spin Out, he is. He's a race car driver and singer. Yeah, Tickle Me. I mean, I guess he didn't do many more. I'm sure he did in some of those movies, went shirtless, but not like you said, not like he did in Blue Hawaii or Fun in Acapulco, where he was like shirtless most of the time. One actor I interviewed for the Beach movies, his name was Aaron Kincaid. He had a hairy chest. And when they did Girls on the Beach, they made the guys shave their chests because for the teenage girl audience.
Right, smooth as king.
Smooth king, right. And then he refused to do it anymore. So what he did in Beach Ball and when he was in The Ghost in the Invisible Bikini, he was allowed to wear a windbreaker. So he said, you see me on the beach and I have a windbreaker, like half zipped up and everything, because he refused to shave his chest any longer. But they didn't want him to be bare-chested with all that hair. But I don't think Elvis had hair, unless they shaved him too. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure if it was just a personal decision or if there was something going on. If somebody listening out there knows this, they should definitely email me, because I was just so enthralled by how overt it is that not even shorts Even his legs are covered. It's actually really humorous. A little bit of business because you're just watching this guy out on the beach and water skiing and he's practically wearing a parka for the entire film. I did want to bring up really briefly before we close out the Romano character because we haven't really talked about him. Played by Fabrizio Mioni. The movie kind of situates him as the rival for Valerie's affections and then he just disappears.
Yeah, so did Peter Brooks. The first guy she hooks up with is the bookworm who lives next door. He's at the staying in the room next door.
Right, and then, right.
And so that's why Elvis and the guys think it's clear sailing because Valerie's with this little bookworm. And then, of course, she falls with a Latin lover. But yeah, you're right. He does totally disappear from the movie.
The whole movie really isn't necessarily this love triangle, which is fine. But I did think it was interesting that we spend a long period of the first half of this movie setting him up as this rival. I mean, mind you, he's probably a guy that would end up on, like, a watch list because, again, we watch him try to get her drunk intentionally, so he's presented as this horrible character, but then he disappears. I guess he found someone else.
I think that maybe that what it was. You know, he was this Latin lover type. He probably just went on to his next conquest.
I did want to bring up really briefly, we have two great side performances here. Jackie Coogan's in this movie. He plays a sergeant in a small role. Jackie Coogan might know as one of the first famous child stars, Uncle Fester on the Addams Family, so it was nice to see him. And John Fiedler is in here. He plays the hotel manager, and he is best known to most people as the voice of Piglet. So as soon as heard his voice, I was thinking, oh my gosh, Piglet's in this movie.
The interest with this with Elvis and his guys, Elvis would not go up to any of the actresses to ask them out. So Gail Gerber played Jimmy Hawkins' girlfriend, and one of the guys, I think it was Red West, came up to her and said, oh, Elvis would like you to come to his little party at his apartment. Gail was doing Under the Yum Yum Tree at night, so she had to decline. But she was a ballet dancer and came from the world of classical music and jazz in Canada and had no idea who Elvis even was when she did the movie until the next movie when she did Harum Scarum. By that time, she was the girlfriend of Terry Southern, the writer of The Magic Christian and Candy, who was a huge Elvis fan. And he schooled her on who she had worked with. And she was like, oh. Then she was more excited when she did Harum Scarum. And another little funny story from Gail was Boris Segal came up to her one day on the set and said, Joe Pasternak asked me if he would want to go to lunch at his house this weekend. And Pasternak, of course, was his big producer and discovered like Elizabeth Taylor and Deanna Durbin. And Gail was like, oh my God. She goes, of course I'll go. She saw Pasternak on the set later on and he said, I heard you said yes to my lunch invitation. And she said, yes, I did. And he whispered in her ear, wear black underwear. And she was like, oh, no. So she said she went in full body armor, white gloves, a hat, typical 60s, you know, a little jacket, got to the house, and she went into the backyard, sit at the pool in the patio. And unbeknownst to Joe Pasternak, his teenage son came home from college, saw Gail, made a beeline to the table, and sat there the whole time talking with her and his father. Whatever Joe Pasternak had in mind, the son killed his chances.
Wow, that is amazing.
With the Me Too thing and everything, it's sort of like, even back then, I think actresses, they knew. They knew what was going to happen, and some of them knew, like Gail, had a game plan to avert it.
I tell everybody, the whole concept of Me Too, I mean, we know it existed back then. It's just nobody talked about it.
Talked about it.
And the movie is, yes, very 60s, this movie especially. I mean, I think it sets the tone when you have a very breathy narrator that's commenting on 36, 24, 36 on the girl on the beach. And I was sitting there thinking, oh no. Thankfully, it didn't annoy me nearly as much as something like Beach Blanket Bingo or some of the other movies out there that are very hard to sit through. If you're a female after a certain point, you're just thinking, I hate everybody right now. But let's sum up our thoughts on Girl Happy. I think this is a very cute, relatively inoffensive 1960s beach movie. Elvis is good. He gets a chance to stretch his wings about as far as they would have gone for this time period. It is easy to see how Beatlemania probably trounced on everything, but it's a good encapsulation of, I think, why people like the beach aesthetic, the beach films of that time period. They're great, peppy, bouncy little musicals that know when to say when. They're, you know, this is, I think, about, what, 90 minutes? So it doesn't overstay its welcome. And the cast is really good. Got a lot of fresh young faces. And Elvis is there. And I think even the worst Elvis movie, I'm guessing, I haven't seen all of them, but I'm assuming even the worst Elvis movie is still worth watching at least once. Tom, right. What do you think about this movie overall?
Compared to the beach movies, it's not one of the best because it was supposed to be set in Florida, but they filmed all the beach scenes in Santa Monica. So if you notice, the scenes on the beach are very tight because they couldn't show the mountains in the background. Unlike Beach Party and Beach Blanket Mingo, where there's nice wide shots of the cast surfing and dancing on the beach, here it's not because they have to keep it close or the shots are looking at the actors in the ocean because they couldn't turn the camera the opposite way because there's I guess it's the Santa Monica Mountains back there. But compared to Elvis movies, it's one of my favorites from the 60s. I like this one because, as we just discussed, it's got a great supporting cast. Him and Shelley Fabre are a very great couple. They have a lot of chemistry. They liked each other, and it shows, and they work together two more times. I like the songs, soundtrack. I'm not a big ballad guy, but even here, Puppet on a String is very sweet. And I like the title song. I even like Do the Clam. With Joe Pasternak as the producer, the production values are typically higher than a lot of the other Elvis Presley movies at the time. If MGM does a low-budget movie, it doesn't look like a low-budget movie in the 60s. They really know how to, like, spend their money to make it look more expensive than what it was. And for me, like I said, my favorites are Roustabout, Paradise Hawaiian Style, Blue Hawaii, and this is one of my favorites because, again, it has that beach, it's got Elvis, it's got that great cast, a lot of young faces, and the music. Again, as an Elvis movie, it's one of my favorites. As a beach movie, not so much because of the lack of beach scenes.
Gotta love a movie that has a beach setting and yet it still looks like a studio beach, even though they filmed, in Santa Monica. Well, listeners, let me know your thoughts on Girl Happy, Elvis, beach movies, whatever you want. You can email them to me at ticklishbiz@gmail.com, and I'll read them on the next episode. Once again, I'd like to thank Tom Luzzanti for joining me today. Tom, where can fans find to get in touch with you, find out more about your book, all of that?
Sure. My website is 60cinema.com. I blog there, and I also have a Twitter account, at Tom Liz, T-O-M-L-I-S, and I have an Amazon author page, and you can reach me there as well. And also, I have a Facebook page, 60 Cinema Books.
That'll close out this edition of Ticklish Business. You can listen to Ticklish Business a multitude of different ways, either directly at ticklishbusiness.podbean.com, via Stitcher Radio and Player FM, on iTunes, or on Spotify. If you are listening via iTunes, please consider helping the podcast out with a rating and review. As always, you can contact me directly with questions, comments, suggestions at ticklishbiz, that's B-I-Z, at gmail.com, or visit me at my official website where I discuss classic films regularly, journeysinclassicfilm.com. The podcast is also on Twitter at ticklish_biz. Want to learn more about upcoming episodes or hear exclusive content before anyone else? Then consider supporting Ticklish Business via Patreon. I have a wealth of amazing perks, and all your donations go straight back into making Ticklish Business the premier classic film podcast that it is. If you become a patron right now, you can listen to the pilot episode of my first supplementary show, based on a true podcast. Co-host William Bibbiani and I talk about how Hollywood talks about itself in cinema, starting with the 1999 Orson Welles biopic RKO 281. Also on Patreon right now, you can check out my previous interviews with author Alan K. Rohde and TCM tour guide Sarah Louise Lilly, and more. If you're interested in becoming a patron, just head over to patreon.com/ticklishbiz. Or want to learn more about the stars turning 100 and my continued centennial celebration? Well, if you're a member of TCM's exclusive fan club, TCM Backlot, you can read my year-long series about the stars spotlighted on the show. I talk about movies and information that you won't hear on the podcast. And speaking of the centennial celebration, next time, Drea Clark is going to join me to celebrate centennial star Robert Walker as we talk about 1944's Sin